You
Then
and
one
salad. Oh,
or
that's so
two?
funny. It's just a book shit.
All right.
So.
So right now we have the winters on and we also have the candles on. And them on and here, right? I'm not gonna say your names because
That's
I
great.
mean, people get all nervous. It's gonna be recorded.
What?
Wow.
What? Yeah. Looking at
What's the problem?
notes.
What are we talking about with the race?
No. Not
Used
yet.
to have
Liz
notes.
asked me to add people this week, and I didn't answer.
Oh. Okay.
She thought I would be one of
the next time, yes, I
the
understood.
I thought
But
the ones who were not feeling well, I thought you were gonna
oh,
send
I
the
did.
link.
I did send it.
Oh.
And she wrote back that she has a Zoom meeting and will join us at
Okay,
7:30. And
fine.
he has another Torah class at 8 o'clock that conflicts. I know.
Well,
So much Torah. I
I'm
said
looking
it's okay. That's okay with the Torah teacher.
Okay. Anyway, wonderful, wonderful. It was so nice to be
Okay.
back. Thank you again, Pamela and Joe, for opening up your beautiful home and hosting us. It's I can't say that I missed you all over the summer. I can't say that. That would be a lie, but only because I didn't have a chance to even think about it. The summer is nuts. The summer was running camp, thank God. We again, great numbers. We
Have a good
had
time.
a great time. It was an excellent summer.
Oh, that's great.
And
I wasn't there, but except for that, it was
but
good.
more importantly, your children weren't there, which really was the only downer of the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it was an excellent summer, and thank God it's been busy ever since. We had a couple of weeks after the summer, after camp, but then right back into the saddle, and boy, we've been off and running ever since. I am thankfully, like, this is a good example. I am teaching every single night this week in four different cities. It's just, that's how we roll. That's how we roll, and it's great.
So why don't I know about the other two?
Because you're not invited.
You're cheating.
Yeah,
You're cheating at
I
what?
mean, there's a minimum age and there's also a maximum age.
Oh.
Yes, but the maximum age is 18.
Oh, they're teaching.
They're two teen
All
classes,
right.
two teenage
This
classes.
budget. But
Yeah.
you don't want to be
You
there
don't want to be there.
anyway.
You don't want to be there. But yes, so thank God. Last night I was in Rockville. Tonight we're here. Tomorrow night we're on Zoom. And then Thursday night I'm in Frederick. It's like, keep it
Not about
going.
your work.
It's back and going, right? So
It's
the band's all back together.
a good problem to have,
It's
actually.
wonderful. It's really wonderful. So
Seriously.
it's great. I'm thankful that we're able to do this again. Thank you all for scheduling, fitting it into your schedule. It's not fun teaching to an empty room. So thank you for taking the time as well.
And lots of life cycle stuff.
Right. And thank God, a
Remembers.
lot of life cycle stuff, some good, some not so good, but they're called life cycles for a reason. But thank God, there's been weddings and engagements and bar mitzvahs and yeah, funerals as well. But that's the way it has to be. But I'm gonna throw it out there. I assumed that we were gonna continue using this theme of jukebox of Judaism and using, but I'm certainly open if anybody wants to offer other suggestions. I'm totally open to it. Or if you have songs that you would like to offer as suggestions, I'm happy to ignore that, but that's perfectly fine. Whatever works for you.
Nice girl.
I do have a suggestion
Yes.
that when you first put this group together, you sent out, tell me your songs. I told you my song and you happily ignored it. So I'm bringing it up now.
Ooh.
How about Natural Woman by Carole King?
I don't know the first thing about women. What do I know?
You
That's why
didn't
I'm
say
bringing
that.
it up. That's why
She wants to
we
teach
all need
to
to
you.
learn
Oh, you want
together.
to teach it to me? We can
Yes.
have a guest lecturer.
Maybe because there are
Scholar
no
Russell.
mentions or so few mentions of
Well,
women.
then, but we haven't had any women songs.
Well, then you missed the before we started Jukebox of Judaism, we did superheroes in the Torah universe
Oh, yeah.
instead of
I
Marvel,
remember that.
right?
Yeah,
And
cool.
we did a whole bunch of women.
Yeah.
Did you have binders of women? Oh my goodness.
Binders?
Who had
That's
that?
a
Mitt Romney? Yeah. Was
callback.
it Mitt Romney who had binders of
No.
women?
Yes. God forbid. No.
Read.
I mean, you remember.
Anyway, tonight's song is courtesy of Liz, actually. She
Oh, that's
inspired
good.
me. She inspired me sometime last week about it.
Literally,
And
she inspires me.
Last week she sent me this, and I thought it was a great suggestion. And that is, "Who Are You" by The Who.
Who? Oh.
That's the one. You can play it if you want. Right? It's not a lot of. There's not a lot. There's not a lot of. It's not okay. So that's how it became famous to the next generation, right? And through CSI, it became the theme song.
Oh, all those CSI.
Crime scene investigations.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and they used it. Even for their sequels, they used other The Who songs.
I did not know that.
There you go. But this song, "Who Are You," right? Really, it got me thinking. What is the question? I mean, who are you?
Maybe it's a statement.
Okay.
If you're the
if who is a noun, yes. Who is a plural noun, like in England, have police, for example, are you? Which means you are a member of the who communion.
Welcome back.
Probably gonna say
yes, Jim.
So in order to at least jump into the subject matter, and then we'll get further into it. I have to tell you a great story. Great, great story about a gorilla. A gorilla that escaped from the zoo. Right? Not that long ago, we had some monkeys, right? That's a
crazy they're still
story.
Out. Are they still out?
There's a bunch of them still missing.
What do you mean?
They're not in Loudoun County, relax.
They got out of Dannemora. They had some inside of
That's a true crime, man.
This gorilla escaped, and they're looking high and low. They cannot find this gorilla anywhere until finally someone noticed that the gorilla had gone into the local library and was sitting at a table, and there were two books. It's not a true story, relax. There were two books in front of the gorilla. One of them was the Bible, and the other was Darwin's theory of evolution. And the zookeeper sees the gorilla and says, "What are you doing here?" The gorilla responds, and he says, "I'm contemplating the really important question of life." "What does that mean?" asks the zookeeper. And the gorilla says, I have to decide. Am I my brother's keeper, or am I my keeper's brother?
Very funny.
Who are you? Who's the real you? So interestingly enough, I'm going to ask it as a question. What is the first recorded question in the Torah? This is a great question. What is the first recorded actual question that is asked? Well, you have to think. You have
Where
to
are
think.
You?
Think, 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 think. Give yourself a couple of seconds to think. Remember my 4-second rule? You have to have 4 seconds between the end of a question and before you entertain answers.
I forgot the question.
For those of us who are a little more, you have to make it 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Did you eat of the tree?
Okay.
Who are you?
Who are you?
Where are you?
Where are you?
Where are you?
No, he knows where. Yeah.
Who was there? Didn't Adam say that when he heard rustling in the shrubs and he wanted to know who was there? What is that?
Oh my God, that's Ted. Where are you? That's from him.
So Dimitri and Pamela are on the. You're in agreement.
I thought it was "Where are you?"
Where?
But at the same time, I don't know why Hashem would ask.
Wasn't there a question?
Where are you?
Wait, there was a question posed to Cain.
Well, that's later.
Okay.
This is in the first page one. One A. No.
Muriel is suggesting that there's something before that. That before God asks Adam and Eve, "Where are you?" He asks, "Who's there?" Rustling in the trees. Okay. That's your suggestion, right? What do you think, Lauren?
Is it the Bible?
I have
somewhere?
No clue.
Okay, if you had to, I like the answer. That's good. If you had to choose between the two available options, which one would you choose? No pressure.
Or where am I?
No.
Where am I? That's usually when I don't pay attention as I drive home.
Where am I? Yeah, I hate when that happens. I feel like you. Anyway.
What do you folks think? First question recorded in the Torah.
Okay, so let's look it up.
Let's look it up. I want to know.
I could have done that.
What verse and chapter? I'm curious.
I'll tell you.
I know you will.
It's chapter 3, okay, which means the Garden of Eden.
It says as follows. The woman perceived that the tree was good for eating and that it was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was desirable as a means to wisdom. She took of its fruit and ate, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized that they were unclothed, and they sewed together a fig leaf and made themselves aprons. They heard the sound of Hashem God manifesting itself in the garden toward evening, and the man and his wife hid from Hashem God among the trees of the garden. Hashem God called out to the man and said to him,
"Where are you?
Where are you?"
I was on the same right.
You're only one verse off. The recorded aspect, which is probably from a movie somewhere, they ask, "Who's there?" Right? That's not recorded in the Torah.
No.
That's not there. But the very first actual question was God asking, "Where are you?" Now, Pamela has a great follow-up question to that, and that is, why would God be asking, "Where are you?" He knows exactly where they are.
Only to demonstrate that they have strayed from the path or wherever they were. So they're in a different place than they were when...
I would say check with Adam to see what he thinks about where he was.
Okay, so I like where this conversation... I don't know if you can hear that. It's a great point. There's no question that this wasn't an informational question. God needed to know, where are you? God knows exactly where they are. However, it's a tremendous lesson about how we deal with children, how we deal with students, how we deal with colleagues, how we deal with employees. If they do something wrong, what is our reaction?
What do you think you're doing?
Okay.
I can't
there's
for you.
Okay. No, I'm not saying you have to say, where are you? But
what
you,
do you need?
I'll give you the good example there. Okay, you are out of control. It's like it takes 6 months to get you back in gear. We're good.
She's right.
There's the Aww. Right. The kid. There's a 2-year-old, and there's crayon markings on the wall, right? And there's crayons right there. Okay. Most of us would have said, "What did you just do? Did you just write on the wall?"
No.
Well, that's not necessarily the right way to do it, right? Now, we know, as certainly as parents, we try that we want our children, / employees, students, whatever it is, that they should come forward and admit what they did wrong. You don't want to put it in a situation of where you're accusing, even if you know you're right. It's not the right dynamic. Sometimes you don't have a choice, okay? So you want to open a dialogue with a question that's a no-brainer. You start with an obvious. Right?
Where are you?
Right?
I see there's some writing on the wall.
Right. Or are these the crayons you were playing with? It's an obvious, right? But you start a dialogue. Rashi on this verse actually quotes early sources that says that's what God was doing. He didn't want to come out right and say, "Did you eat from the tree I told you not to eat?" Because that's confrontational.
Yes.
Rather, he starts with, "Where are you?" Like as if he's looking for, "Over here." You know, very meekly. Here.
Here.
Right.
Would you like a bite?
You know? That's how Rashi, that's one understanding. It's just a nice insight about how you deal with people in not a confrontational, like accusatory tone. However, both of you said something, I don't know if you meant it that way, but you had a much deeper understanding. And I want to bring this out. How do you say, "Where are you" in Hebrew? I'm not expecting you to know this. That's the more modern Hebrew. What? In the biblical, Eifo Atah, where are you? But that's a modern term. In biblical Hebrew, it's actually an interesting word. It's the word Ayeka. Aleph, Yud, Kaf, He. Ayeka. Where are you? That's how it, okay? But if you know a little bit about Hebrew, it's fascinating. Let's take a step back. There, we know that there are five, what are things that are called, five of our books of Tanakh are called a Megillah. Megillah, right? The most famous one being Megillat Esther, the one we read on Purim. Okay, that's the most famous. But there actually are four others that we read on various holidays. Anybody? For, I don't know. Right? You have, it's not fair. I should just teach it, right? Number one of them is called Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs. That's also a Megillah, which we read on Passover. Okay? There's another one called Kohelet. In English, they call it Ecclesiastes, which is read on Sukkot. You have another one called Rut, right? The book of Ruth, right? Which is read on Shavuot. And then comes the fifth one, which we read, interestingly enough, on Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, saddest day on the Jewish calendar. There's a Megillah that's read. Anybody know what it's called?
Is that Judges?
No. In English, it's called Lamentations. You've heard that. In Hebrew, it's called Echa. The book, the Megillah known as Echa, it's spelled the same word. Some way is the word Ayeka, Aleph, Yud, Kaf or Kaf, same letter, Hey. Ayeka, on a much deeper level, wasn't just an informational question, where are you? But where are you? What happened to you? In just a short period of time, I created first man and woman.
Wow, that makes sense.
I know.
Yeah.
I created these beings that were in perfect harmony, physical and spiritual. I gave them a body. I gave them a soul. You're in the Garden of Eden. This is a utopic kind of environment. And you went against what I asked you. Where are you? Where's the real you? Did you let other things, external things, dictate or encourage you or perhaps lead you astray to change? What happened here?
They didn't know the difference between right and wrong.
So we talked about this. I don't remember if you were there or not.
I just popped in.
No. In a previous class. I won't hold you. It wasn't on the final, so don't worry about it.
Oh, good. That's good.
They did know the difference between good and evil. They did. They had to have, because God's response to it is just too over the top. You don't get so angry with your two-year-old who draws and colors on the wall, they really don't know any better. And yet in our story of the Garden of Eden, God is angry with the snake. God is angry with Adam. God is angry with Eve, throws them out, banishes them. I mean, it's like the whole world has changed. If they're just two-year-olds who don't know any better, why is God's response that way? So it's what exactly this tree was is a whole discussion. So Diane, with your permission, I'm going to hold off so we don't get totally sidetracked.
Okay.
Very important question before I fell asleep again. What happened to the garden afterwards? Who was tending to it? Because Adam and Eve were supposed to be the stewards.
I recommend the book highly. In the end of chapter 3, it actually tells the story of what happened.
Oh.
Is there a song about that?
Not that I know of.
All right.
Not that I know of, but it's a couple of sentences. Okay?
I was not aware that they were husband and wife.
Adam and Eve, you mean?
Yeah. I've never heard it.
Friends with
civil union.
Benefits. Exactly all we have here.
We thought they were just...
The way that the term that's used is Ish and Isha, man and woman, but yes. it's also husband and wife. That's the terminology.
Okay,
but I have a different question. I take issue with where rather than who or what.
Okay, so you're raising a good question. Okay, but I think if you really analyze it much more, it's not just who are you, He's really asking, where is the one that I created a certain way? Where is he? Where is she? It's a much more global question than what happened to you. I'm asking, where is this great individual, these two individuals that I created with such potential? Where are they? Where have they gone?
Lost.
They seem to be, if I could just go back in a circle, right? Echa. I'm lamenting. Again, the word echa is lamentation. I'm lamenting the fact that they're not where they were. They have fallen from grace. It's not just what happened to you. Oy, it's a kratz. It's a oy. It's a groan, a lamenting. Where are you?
Disappointment.
It is a disappointment. Sorry, right? That's a much stronger term than what happened to you. Where
what
are
have you?
You
is it
but that's really what it is. Where is the you that was?
Where are you? Is ayeka used anywhere else?
Ayeka?
Or
this word ayeka?
This one?
He's just cycling through everything.
I'm only up to chapter 24.
A lot of the phrases that we use when someone is not doing what they should be doing are like, where kind of like he's gone astray, he's on the wrong path. They're very like geographical.
That's
kinds
a great
of
point. That's
that
a
is
point.
A good question.
Yeah. So I think the where is
it is the deeper question.
Yeah.
Where have you gone? Where is this you that I know was there?
Where's your head at? Where is it?
Very good. That's a great point. So in a way, I find it somewhat, I don't know, it's just it's an observation. The very first question in history is about your identity.
Wow.
Who are you for real? Who are you? Right? That's really, I mean, that's the, you talk about existential questions. I mean, this is it. This is the real deal.
Is this why I misspoke and first said where and heretic? Where are you?
I think maybe, oh. Maybe.
Because that's what the sound can
correct.
Be like.
Correct. No, I hear you. I 100%.
And then what do they say back?
Oh, listen, to, excellent question.
Tell me what happened.
Okay.
I have no idea. Is that what this
he, is? Where are you? He said, I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I am unclothed, so I hid. He's giving some kind of rationalization. That I sensed you were here in the garden. I obviously became afraid because I know I did something wrong. See, Adam and Eve were not afraid before they did the wrong deed. They conversed with God. They were created by God. There's no issues of, right? In fact, they even knew about each other that they were unclothed and there was no embarrassment until after they ate from it. Going back to Diane's question, what is eating from this tree? What changes? I know we talked about it, but okay, Diane, you win. What changes with the eating? I'm just going to read it. I'm here to report the news. That's it. You can make your own opinions. Okay? Hard to find nowadays. Okay? Here it is. Da, da, da. Therefore, imagine that they were both naked, the man and his wife. Notice the term.
I do.
Okay. And they were not ashamed. That's the end of chapter 2. Okay. Pre-sin. Now, chapter 3. Now, the serpent was cunning beyond any beast of the field that Hashem God had made. He said to the woman, did perhaps God say, you shall not eat of the tree of the garden? Yada, yada. We know the rest of the story. Okay. The woman perceived that the tree was good for eating. She took of its fruit. She ate. She gave also to her husband and ate with her, and he ate. Now you're thinking, oh my God, cataclysmic event is about to happen. They ate from the forbidden tree. thunder and lightning and just everything. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized that they were naked, and they sewed together a fig leaf and made themselves apron. How's that for anticlimactic? That's it. The only change is that now they realized that they were naked.
That's a huge change.
Yeah.
It's a loss of innocence.
They realized something.
1 second.
What does nakedness have to do with the, you know, what they did?
Right. Thank you. This isn't
the
just
tree of knowledge.
Tree of knowledge of what?
Well, we didn't know that. They didn't know
everything.
Okay.
So let's take a step back, because the hand's asking the most fundamental question. What does eating from this tree have to do with their eyes now perceiving things differently? Can we agree on that? That's the only change. Perception. Nothing actually changed. Were they naked before? Yes. Were they naked now? Yes. What changed?
Were they eating before, just not from the tree? Like physically eating?
Yeah. In fact, there was a commandment to partake of all the trees of the garden. I'm telling you, folks, you got to read the book.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously. It's all there.
But I guess I'm thinking that, like, they were in almost like a childish state, like a state of innocence, and then eating from the tree of knowledge brought them down into like the mundane aspects of the world, and then that's when it
is. So why is it called the tree of good and evil? Called the tree of innocence.
Hmm.
Or just the tree of knowledge.
But
just leave it at that.
Good and evil. I mean,
I thought
so what they do wrong. Is knowledge a bad thing?
No, I've heard all of
no.
This.
So then what? So what they do wrong?
Well, I guess that maybe wasn't part of the original plan.
So we weren't supposed to be smart?
I think it was part of the original plan.
It had to be.
For them to lose their innocence, to understand that sin is something that you can choose.
Wait a second. Who determined it was a sin? Who told you it was a sin?
No. I'm saying that.
No, I'm lobbing you a softball right over the middle of the plate.
No, that's
Stacey.
Okay.
Go for it. Come
I'm
on.
I'm just saying.
I'm giving it to you on a silver platter.
Free will.
Good. Thank
you.
So is knowledge a bad thing?
No.
Is knowledge a good thing?
Yeah.
I would think.
It is.
isn't it a good thing to have knowledge between good and evil? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd be going around absolutely blind and not have any clue what's right, what's wrong. Yes, no.
There's a difference between knowledge as an accumulation of certain bytes of information.
Yes.
And the ability to make a judgment.
What kind of judgments? Come on.
What
come on,
is good? What is bad?
Oh, what? How do you determine good and bad?
I don't know.
Ah, oh, come on.
Whether it's accurate, whether it's a conjecture.
Okay, let me ask. We're going in the right direction, folks. This is great. This is
same
excellent.
Direction.
This is
where are you?
The question is, where are we going to end up? I don't know. but here's what to consider. Okay. Were they created, were Adam and Eve created with free will? Did they have choice?
They must have had choice.
I agree.
But
it had to be. Otherwise, the whole story doesn't even begin.
But you have to jump off that cliff, and you have to choose to jump off
the
cliff.
Wait, that means, but 1 second. The underlying principle of free choice is that you have two options.
Yes.
We have to agree on that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way out.
Yeah.
You know, the person who's incarcerated may have technically their free will, but they only have one option. They eat it or they don't. There's no, you know, just jumping down, getting in the car and picking something up at the supermarket down the road. So yeah, they have, in theory, they have free will, but they have no choices.
They had to choose free will.
Okay. You can't choose free will if you don't have it.
Well, they have free will, whether they live or they die. They can hang themselves if they choose in their... in their cell.
Yes, that's true.
That's
that is true. You're right. You're right. But I'm saying, let's go back to Adam and Eve for a minute. I thought you were talking about Adam and Eve hanging themselves in the garden. I'm like, what are you talking about? Yes, but that's predicated on they have choices. You have to have choices to have a concept of free will. It just doesn't exist.
Well,
you
they
only
have a choice.
So wait. So that means they have a sense that there's right and wrong.
Mm.
Has to be. I'll show it to you. Because if there is no, you called it innocence. If they don't know the difference between right and wrong, then why is this whole story so big and so global with its impact that has to this day impacted us?
Well, they disobeyed God.
Oh, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, they disobeyed God.
I tried.
I heard you the first time, and I'm pushing back.
He gave them an order, and
they did that.
And Eve was persuaded by the serpent.
Great, perfect.
To do something.
Disobey.
I don't know if she knew. I don't remember the exact words. I did read it. Stacy can testify. But I don't know that it was a conscious choice of doing something wrong.
Why? Why not? Were Adam and Eve, let me ask a more simple question. Were Adam and Eve created with intelligence? Were they, I'll make it easier, right? When they, were they an infant when they were created? How do you picture it? As an adult.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what age, don't ask, right? Day one is probably a 35-year-old, but I don't know, right? But were they born with the intelligence of that adult?
No.
Really? And again, I go back to my question. What kind of test, what kind of scenario is God putting them in? That's like taking your 2-year-old and letting them play with matches.
Say, don't.
And that, no, you didn't say it. Right? Don't play with matches. It's sitting right there. What do you want? They don't have it. It's a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. I can't buy that. There's no challenge then. It's not a fair test. There has to be that if they are physically created as adults, they have the intellect of adults. Where the question comes down, and I think you're really right on it, the fact that God gave them a commandment, following the commandment and disobeying the commandment are the two choices available at that moment. Okay. And they know there are choices. Follow. If God told them not to eat from it, and they're like, what? Never heard. I don't know what you're saying. That's not a test. That's not a challenge. They're not talking in a language. So if he said to them, of all the trees of the garden you may freely eat, but the tree of knowledge of good and evil do not eat thereof, for the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. Wait.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I can't make this stuff up. Hashem God took the man, placed him in the Garden of Eden to work in the garden. Hashem God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of knowledge of good and bad you must not eat thereof, for on the day you eat of it you shall surely die. How is that? Was that pretty darn verbatim?
100%.
I quoted it a few times. It's chapter 2, verse 16. It's just, and those are the words.
But Eve didn't hear that.
Okay. Yes.
But then did Adam?
Yes.
So Adam warned her.
Yes, and messed up. Another whole story. I can't. We're going to go down another whole rabbit hole.
A quick question.
Yeah, sure.
Had Adam and Eve talked to anybody but Hashem?
No, before? There is nobody around.
That's the first time we talked to somebody else.
Yeah. There is nobody. Who's around?
Well, angels, I don't know.
Oh,
they're not down here. They're not here.
So what does this say about the nature of man?
What?
What does this say about the nature of man? Presented with this choice, we can make a good decision for ourselves.
We could have.
Right, but we didn't. So the nature of man is not so wonderful.
Well, the nature of man is that he is challenged to make good choices, but he has the ability. And that's really a critical piece here. I'm just going to say what I want to say, and you can disagree. That's fine. But this tree of knowledge of good and evil, they knew darn well following the commandment not to eat of it is called good, and disobeying it is called bad.
It was tempting.
And it was known. Wait,
yeah.
But that's known before they ate from that tree.
How do you know?
Wait.
We know what death is. And they didn't know what death was. So you were sure to die.
I don't know, but when my mother said to me, if you leave this house to that, you're going to get such and such. I had no idea what that punishment was, but I knew it wasn't something good.
Because you had an experience with it.
I didn't have an experience. And I'm willing to entertain it that maybe they didn't know what death was. But did they know that God said don't eat from it?
Yeah.
You can't deny that. God said don't eat from that tree. So the definition of good and evil was following the command. Or disobeying the command. That is before they ate from it. So what was this tree of knowledge of good and evil? I'm arguing, I'm positive, okay, that they knew there was something called good and something called evil before they ate from that tree. Because otherwise, this story never begins. So what was this tree? That is ultimately your question. What is this tree? So here's what I'm going to do, okay? I'm going to put a comma in a different place, okay? Most people, when they translate these words, that it's the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they translate it as, this is the tree of knowledge of good, comma, and evil, separating the two concepts of good and evil, that without this tree, they couldn't differentiate between good and evil. I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting they knew what good and the alternative of evil was. So what was this tree? Watch. It was the tree of knowledge of, comma, good and evil. Otherwise,
Rabbi,
mixture, combination. I'll call it where beforehand everything was either black or white. This tree introduced a third concept called gray. Now, the whole story begins to make more sense to me. There were two options before they ate from it. And God said to them, don't eat from this tree. Not because I'm a mean God, because you're going to introduce into your life doubt, confusion, gray area where it's not so clear what's right to do, what's not right to do. It's not in your best interest to eat from that tree.
Well,
okay. Now, wait, I just want everyone to digest this. I want to digest this. Okay, so I'm just putting all the pieces together. They knew what good was, that's following the command. They knew what evil was disobeying the command. To go ahead and eat from it, did they know all the ramifications of it? Did they really? Good questions, open for discussion. But at the fundamental level, they knew they had a choice. And God said, don't pick a third option here. Don't introduce the you know, looking through, my wife loves the fact, I say that jokingly, that I have these, what are they called, photography, you know, they change color.
Transitions,
thank you. Transition lenses, right? 99% of the time, I love it, right? But of course, for pictures, right? If you're outdoors, right? Do we realize all the ramifications of, no, okay, maybe, yeah. But when you go ahead and introduce that from forevermore, you're going to be looking through transition lenses that are not crystal clear. It's going to introduce doubt. In fact, the Zohar, the book of mysticism, when it discusses this tree, doesn't call it the tree of knowledge. It says it calls it the tree of confusion and doubt. That's what it calls it, because that's what this tree introduced. It's the tree of knowledge of, comma, good and evil. Before they ate from it, they had a clear perception. This is what things are. There's a balance. This is a physical thing. There's a spiritual thing. And we're supposed to find harmony between the two of them, right? Between both aspects, because that's what we're created, both physical and spiritual. I told you, when they ate from the tree, what changed? What's the only
perception.
Thing? What do you mean perception?
Their perception.
Yeah. Because till now, before they ate from it, when they looked at each other as unclothed, okay, so what? The body has its functions. Am I embarrassed to show you my eyes? No. Am I embarrassed to show you my ears? No. Am I embarrassed to eat something in front of you? No. Because that's a normal bodily function, right? So procreation was a normal bodily function. There's nothing about it that has a connotation of a, ooh, that changes. Once you introduce this mixture, then it's not just an organ for procreation. It also has a desire. Ooh, there's something more to this. As the terrible joke goes, when God, why is she called woman? Why was Eve called a woman? Because when God brought her to him for the first time, he went, woman. Right? Just kidding.
I'm going to tell people.
Right? So what this tree was now, it created a third option of confusion, of doubt, of gray matter. Okay? And then, and that's why God says, where are you? What's changed here? You're not, before you had two very clear paths. Where are you? Oh, you're on the doubt? You're in the gray zone now? Oh.
Out.
Okay, this is dangerous to leave you in the Garden of Eden now. It's dangerous. We have to go through a whole different now
portal,
whole different rule, a whole different, you know, existence.
So what happened next? He took them out.
Well, everybody gets their punishment. Snake, Adam, and Eve—they all get something, and then ultimately, they're banished. They're banished from the Garden of Eden, and God puts up sentry posts, sentries, at the front of the. Can't get there. You can try, but not there. Total side, right? So how did we get here?
How did snake move before that fruit eating?
Had legs.
It did?
Yeah.
That was his punishment.
It's the punishment is that on your belly shall you slither.
Yeah.
That means before then.
He was upright.
He was upright.
That's one of the most amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe it was
visions.
A lizard. Maybe a lizard. Who knows?
That
he was up.
The serpent was
or
upright.
No, upright.
Was upright.
On a sand.
The snake was probably was the king of the beasts at the time before it was given, or after this story, so to say, the lion now takes over as the king of the jungle. But the snake was the top.
Was the top.
Yeah. But because upright. Of what but because of what he did, he lost that mantle of leadership. Everybody fell from grace there. Adam, Eve, and the snake. Everybody did.
Do we know why the snake did it? Does it matter? It was his nature.
Yes,
it must
yes.
have been part of the whole
scenario. Set up.
Okay,
whole
it's
thing.
All part of the challenge. All part of the challenge. You know?
I mean, it
if you wasn't
known to God that this was going to happen.
That's irrelevant.
Did the snake have choice?
That's irrelevant?
It's irrelevant because God's foreknowledge doesn't change my ability to choose.
But I'm just curious. My assumption is that God
everything.
Knows everything.
Okay, so
then,
yes, he knows, but he's not going to change. He's not going to change it because he gave us that. Once he created the universe and put us in it, now choices are ours. He will not force us to make any decisions that way.
But did the snake have moral choice? And then would he then be equivalent to humans?
To some degree, yeah. To some degree.
What's
the
difference? He wasn't really a snake. It was a different creature that could talk and had a
clearly
lot of knowledge. Was that he had knowledge or he shared with the people, saying that once you eat the fruit, you will be as God, you will know the same. I will have same degree
of snake said that too. Know. You will know.
So
that was the reasoning.
Yeah. Chapter 3.
You will know the knowledge of God.
My ultimate goal as a
mm-hmm.
teacher is always not just to disseminate information, is to try to get you to analyze. Think more deeply about what it is we read. One of the classes that I'm giving now is revisiting Torah stories. Like really going through it and saying, like, I don't know, whatever, it's not for now. But you know the famous story about Lot and his wife, and they're leaving Sodom and Gomorrah, she's turned into a pillar of salt. So we all learned that in Hebrew school. Hey, that's a great story. Are you out of your flipping minds? Really? We just think, so, oh, yeah. Why? Of all the millions of things that could have happened to Lot's wife, pillar of salt? Why?
I don't know.
Right. So I just spent, so last Thursday night, I spent an hour, 45 minutes to an hour with the group and analyzing the text. That's what I want. I want us to think about these things and not just, oh yeah, I heard that story when I was younger. And okay, what else? Go back and reread them. Reread the stories. Ask the good questions, which you are. This is what it's all about. So coming back to what this song of who are you? You see from the very beginning of humanity, the beginning of human history, that is ultimately the question. Where are you? What's your essence in making your decisions, right? Because you see, it's very much tied to the decisions they made using their free will. It wasn't just playing hide and go seek. That's not what was going on here, right? Clearly, this was about making hard, perhaps wrong decisions. When I couldn't have been more than 3, maybe 4 years old. My mother took me to a department store, I guess, and took my two grandmothers. So it was the three ladies and little me. And my mother asked my two grandmothers if they wouldn't mind for a couple of minutes just watching me while she had to make a return or go to a different department, whatever it was. And they were like, sure, no problem. Oh, two bubbies can watch a grandkid. How hard can that be? Not 2 seconds later, they're like, oh my God, where did he go? They lost. I could not find him. Okay. I don't know that. I don't remember the story, but I've heard it told many, many times because I was an angel, 100%.
Yeah, that's right.
And, and the story goes, and the story goes, and the story goes that maybe 10 minutes, my mother comes back. And of course, my grandmother's like, and this is before the current societal issues about, you know, children. And it was just, oh my God, where could
where
it
come?
So mother was like, okay, when's the last time? Where's the last place you saw him? We saw him in the furniture section. Okay. So they're looking under the beds and they're looking under the pillows and this and that. And finally, out of just desperation, they start opening cabinets and drawers. And in one of those five drawer dressers, they start opening it up. And in the bottom dresser drawer, they open it up and they, lo and behold, there I am. I look up and I say, you found me.
How did you close it?
I don't know. I was really smart. But so clearly, this was not what was going on in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve were not playing hide and go seek. The first question that humanity had to face was, what's your identity? Who and where are you? You think about it, it really plays itself out even more. Let's fast forward, right? Who's the first, so to say, the father of Judaism? Abraham. What's the first charge, the first, I don't say commandment, but basically the commandment that he was told?
The sacrifice.
Nope, before that.
Take your
soul. What?
Be fruitful and return.
No, that's everybody's first.
Circumcised?
So circumcision is the right answer.
No.
That's really the first, but it doesn't happen right away. It doesn't. He's told first, Dimitri's right, and that is Lech Lecha.
Yes.
Like Parsha Lech Lecha.
Oh, well, we'll
go.
Go.
There. I'll tell you later. Test of faith. Test of faith. But if you think about it, the words Lech Lecha are such a strange term. The word Lech means to go. Like the word Holech means to travel, to go. What's Lecha?
Unto yourself.
To yourself. Lech Lecha. Go. So they normally just loosely translate, go for yourself, leaving your family behind, you know, your what you knew from back then and your birthplace and your homeland, right? It's time to start new, right? Some commentaries really read it on a much deeper level. And they say, Lech, this journey is Lecha, is to find out who you are.
Go to yourself.
Go to yourself. Who will you become? God is telling Avram, there's a lot of potential on this road for you. There's a lot to develop within you, ultimately to become Avraham, our ancestor, our father of, right? But he tells him from the outset, Lech, you got to go. Lecha, go find out who you really are. Your greatness is within. Journey to find out who you really are and who you can be. Let's keep going. I think that it really... It's in so many other ways. Let's talk about Moshe and his leadership for a moment. Okay? Let's talk about this. We're all familiar with the story that when God comes to Moshe for the first time, right? For the very first time, where was it? The burning bush. Okay? Is Moshe jumping for joy?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Not at all. He does not want to grab this mantle of leadership. He tries every excuse in the book not to say yes.
Until I thought he was in the eighth row of the temple and Hashem said he chooses him to.
What?
He chooses. I thought
I want to go to that
temple. What temple? Moses is long before the temple.
Well, okay, but doesn't Hashem speak to Moshe in a. In a in a Talmud, in a Mishnah, and he's in the eighth row, and he says, "I pick you,"
okay.
And you're st and he stutters, and he said, "Am I not?"
You're mixing a lot of stories. There is a piece of Talmud.
Well, you're
there
welcome,
is.
Everyone.
There is a piece of Talmud, but that's not the first time that God spoke to him.
God spoke to him in Egypt, didn't he?
No.
Who sent Moshe to go to Pharaoh and scare him?
That's afterwards. That's on his way back down.
Oh.
Okay, let's.
You tell us.
Then. Okay, so let's, again, this is the book of Exodus now. We've moved out of Genesis. Now we're in Exodus. And again, chapter 2. It's pretty early on. Okay, Moshe's born. All right, okay. What happens? There's basically only 5 pieces of information we're told about his early life. One, he's born early and his mom is able to hide him for 3 months.
And he's in the bulrushes.
He's in the bulrushes.
And Pharaoh's daughter.
Wait, we're not up to that yet. His mother, realizing that the Egyptians are similar to the Nazis who kept records as to when women were expecting, when they were due dates, right? So they knew to come looking for Yocheved when she was due, because if it's a boy, they want to get rid of him. So Moshe was a preemie. Most people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yes, that's why she was able to hide him for 3 months. But now the 3 months are up. So she puts him in a basket and she puts him down the Nile. And then, of course, the daughter of Pharaoh's out there bathing. She takes him. It must be a Jewish child, blah, blah. She takes him in. Okay? Nobody, he doesn't want to nurse for everybody. Fine. So Miriam, who's been watching on the sidelines, his sister, sees this and says, runs to the daughter of Pharaoh and says, "I know someone who will nurse him, no problem." And sure enough, takes him back to his own mother. Fine. He's there over a long couple of years, whatever it is. And now Moshe's brought back to the daughter of Pharaoh and he grows up in the palace. So that's so far 3 stories. That's all we got. Maybe 2 stories if you want to put them together. Okay. Next story, he comes out of the palace and he sees an Egyptian beating up a Hebrew and he intervenes and he kills the Egyptian and buries him in the sand. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Okay. The very next day, comes out of the palace and he sees 2 Jews fighting, 2 Hebrews fighting. And he says, hey, that's not how we behave. And they said, what? You're going to kill one of us like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? Moshe realizes his goose is cooked here. He's got to run. So he becomes a fugitive long before Harrison Ford. Okay. For the fugitive? Yes? No? Okay. Sorry. That was like my one movie reference. Okay. He has to flee Egypt and he goes to a country called Midian. He's there. Very next story. He comes there and he comes to a well and he sees there are some boy shepherds bullying the girl shepherds. So super Moshe to the rescue. And he not only saves them.
Super Moshe.
Embarrassed Noel saved
them. That's who Joe was for Halloween. No, super Moshe.
See, not only that, but he gives the drink, the whole flock, and they go back home, and their father, Jethro, right, says, "Why are you home so early today?" And they said, "Well, an Egyptian man saved us." He's like, "What, are you crazy? Bring him home! I'm sure he's a great guy." You know, fine. The Moshe's brought home, like every good guy. And ultimately, he marries one of his daughters, Tzipporah, right? He marries Tzipporah. And the next story is Moshe's out shepherding the flock of his father-in-law, Yisro, and he sees this burning bush that's not consumed by fire, and he turns towards it, and he's like, "What is going on here?" And that's when God speaks for the first time to Moshe. Calls him by his name, and he's like, "What?" Right? "What is going on here?" He wants to, and he tells him, "You're the man, you the man." Right? "No, I got this issue, I got that issue, I got a bad back, you know, I don't know if I can walk all the way back, you know." Tries everything.
Right?
Yeah. And, oh my God, I got a stuttering problem. And besides, do you not know my older brother, Aaron? And he tries everything. Fine. God says, "Sorry, buddy. You're the man." Okay? What's the first question when God appears to Moshe? What's the very first question that is asked?
After burning bush?
Yep.
By Moses or from God?
You tell me.
I don't know.
Where are you?
What?
Where are you?
Who says that?
Did God say that?
Hashem saw that he turned aside to see. And God called out to him from amid the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he replied, here I am. He named me. Okay, here I am. He said, do not come closer to here. Remove your shoes from your feet, for the place upon which you stand is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Moses hid his face and he was afraid to gaze towards God. Okay, God says, I've indeed seen the affliction of my people that is in Egypt. And he tells him, I have this job for you that I want you to take them out. Okay, Moses replied to God. This is the line we're waiting for. Moses replied to God, Mi Anochi. Who am I? Okay, just we'll first do the simple understanding. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should take the children of Israel out of Egypt? In Yiddish, ich bin a garnish. I'm a nothing. Who am I? I'm a simple shepherd. You know, what do I? Me? You're choosing me? But again, the wording is always very precise. Mi anochi is also implying. Sounds like, right? Who am I? What's my identity in all of this? Let's understand. Moshe only knows of himself, really. He grew up. His early years are in Egypt. He's clearly identified as an Egyptian because when he goes and saves the daughters of, you know, the shepherds, they run home and they say, an Egyptian man saved us. So clearly he's dressed like an Egyptian. He walks like an Egyptian. Sorry, I had to get it in. Sorry, I had to get it in there. He knew he was Jewish. Absolutely. He knew that. But his identity up to this point is either Egyptian, because that's his formative years, or the last few decades, he's a Midianite. Oh. He's been living in Midian.
But he knows that he is Hebrew before he leaves there.
That is true. How does he identify? What's his identity?
But for Hashem to say, I want you to take the Jews out of me?
Me? I'm a non-knowledgeable, I'm Jewish, but...
I'm Jewish,
right? I like that, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's questioning, I'm not doubting that I'm a Jew, but of all the Jews, you're choosing me? I don't even have a strong background in any of this.
I think, yes, because I don't even know what it means.
Maybe, right? But I don't know how far to go with it, but it's an identity question. You're choosing me to be the leader to take out the Jewish people? I'm supposed to be representing and be the go-between you and the Jewish people? Mi Anochi? That's my identity? That's a hard question.
What convinces him?
How did what?
How did Aaron get to
Aaron's in Egypt. He didn't have, he stayed.
But
he's been there the whole
time. He was with
he
his
is
mother.
The leader. Yes. He's actually one of the leaders in Egypt.
But he wasn't killed with the firstborn.
He was born already.
Okay.
Wow.
Aaron's older than
him. So was he a
Moshe's the baby. Any of you the youngest in the family? Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Was he a slave? Like, what was his?
No, he was from the tribe of Levi. Levi had a pass. That goes back to the story of Joseph. When Joseph took, when they had the economic boom, right? One of the laws that Joseph got Pharaoh to do is basically what we would call parsonage today, a clergy discount.
Okay.
Right? That the clergy were excluded from certain things. Well, Levi were the clergy of the Jewish people.
So Pharaoh recognized that?
Yeah, because it was true for the Egyptians, their clergy also. There was a dispensation. So Levi, the tribe of Levi, was not in the harsh servitude. Okay. Different than the other tribes.
Well,
that isn't in the movie. There's a lot that's not in the movie. There's a lot. Okay? But I find it fascinating that this is part of what Moshe is grappling with. He's not just blowing off guys saying, me, who am I? Come on. Moshe's not an idiot.
It's not just humility.
It's right. It's more than that. What's my identity as a Jew that I should take the reins of leadership like that? Mi anochi. So what's the convincing argument? Why does he accept it? It's a great, Moshe raises a great question. Me, you're choosing? What do you think?
Why not you? I don't know what the answer is.
It's not you. Who?
That was later.
Yeah. You don't
want to get a little down here somewhere. I got it. It's down there. I don't forget to it. But yes, I'll tell you what I think the winning argument is. It's something that nowadays I think we're much more attuned to it, but we say it in different terminology. If I ask you for a second, I meet you for the first time, and I say, okay, Lauren, tell me a little bit about yourself. Go ahead. You have 30 seconds. Just tell me about yourself. What are you going to say? I'm curious.
My name.
Okay. My name is Lauren Golden.
Right. He wants you to do it.
I live in Ashburn.
Okay.
I have a husband and a child and a stepdaughter. And
where are you from?
Originally, I was born in Maryland. I was born in D.C. My parents live, they just moved close by. I have a sister and a brother.
So, this is all very great information, but you haven't told me one single thing about you. You've told me what you do, maybe. You've told me some of your family, right? But I asked you, tell me about yourself. Everybody does this. Most people do this. Many people actually say what they do for a living. They talk about their career. Right? I didn't ask you what you do. I asked you to tell me about yourself. We make a mistake in that we identify who we are, our essence, with what we do. Whether it's we raise children, or we have this family structure, or we, that's not who we are. What's our essence? What are my character traits? What are my priorities in life? What is my true identity? Not what I do. I read a great, I'll read this to you. I found this online. I didn't know who this person is, but she inspired me.
Well, I feel like people would look at you weird if you said, who am I? Well, I'm a compassionate, loving.
Why? It's only weird. It's weird because people don't do it, but that is, but that's really the answer to my question.
Right.
I didn't ask, what do you do? Tell me about your family. I said, I use my words very carefully.
Right.
Tell me about yourself. I want to know you. You're right. People don't think that way, but that's something. So this lady, her name is Emily Rudell. I don't even know much about her really, but I do know that she was extremely heavy and she made a decision. That's it. No more. So she decided that she's going to start running. And she said, you know, that's it. After 10 minutes, she was winded beyond words. But she made up her mind. She's going to do this. Fine. And now she's been doing marathons. Amazing. Okay. She writes the following. Give me a couple of minutes to read this. It was very inspiring to me. One of the biggest mistakes I've made over the years, the largest source of my anxiety and fear, the impetus behind my self-deprecating thoughts, was tying my identity, who I am, with what I do. Here's my strong opinion on the matter. I'm skipping a few paragraphs. Here's my strong opinion on the matter. Tying our identities and self-worth to our careers, hobbies, work, relationships, etc., is one of the most fragile ways we can live our lives. This isn't really an issue when things are going well. We're making progress in our chosen interests. We just hit a personal best on our 10K time. We got a promotion on career or career recognition. Our accomplishments and recognitions make us feel great, and in turn, our self-confidence improves. The danger, however, lies when things aren't going so well. If you attach your identity to anything you do, then your accomplishments, setbacks, and failures will directly impact your self-worth. What happens if you had a bad performance review at work, critical or harsh feedback from a client, or you inflict an injury that requires you to hang up your running shoes for a while or take some serious time off from lifting? This mistake has been costly for my mental health over the years. When I experienced any form of adversity, I felt like a failure. My first few years of self-employment were awful. I was trying to build a startup. My income was precarious. I struggled to pay rent and couldn't afford basic necessities for months. I was completely accountable to myself. And since my career wasn't going well, I equated this as my lack of intelligence and discipline. I lost motivation to persevere because I felt so apathetic all the time. Upon reflecting on my 4-year running streak this past May, I realized how much of my identity was wrapped up in this now consecutive running persona that I configured in my mind. I contrived a mind-made self that I tried to uphold no matter the costs. Just the mere thought of missing a day sparked so much anticipatory anxiety. Who am I without my streak? So what's the alternative then? This is really what I love. How can we live a more stable, less precarious life? For me, it meant simply changing my verbiage from I am to I do. I own a business. I do freelance work. I write. I read. I run. I lift weights. I love my family and friends. But who I am is none of these things. Instead of saying I'm a runner, I say I love to run. I think she hit it spot on. Who you are, this is what the answer to Moshe was. What'd you do the first 70-something years of your life? Oh, you were a prince in Egypt. You ran away to Midian. You did this. Now you do that. That's not who you are. You know who you are? You have greatness within you, and you are the one right for this. Yeah. You have to get to know who you really are, and I'm the guy to show you. God says, I'm going to coach you through this. In fact, the very next sentence that God says to him, because Moshe is complaining, how am I going to do this? I can't do this by myself. The first thing out of God's mouth, when Moses replies to God, who am I, right, that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should take the children of Israel out of Egypt? And God said, for I shall be with you. You're not doing this alone. I'll be with you step by step, man. I'm going to coach you through all of this. Right? This is your sign that I have sent you. When you take the people out, you'll serve God on the mountain, et cetera, et cetera. God was telling Moshe, it's not what you've done the first something years of your life. Who are you? You're great. You're amazing. You have potential. And yes, you are the right one to take the Jewish people out. That kind of answer from a loving parent, from a loving boss, from a loving friend, that means everything. Everything. Who are you? Go back to Adam and Eve. Ayeka, where's the you that I know you could have been? Where are you?
I love the fact that it's so divorced from your experiences.
Yes. Now, they play a role in shaping, but it doesn't define you.
It's really great. It's really inspiring to hear that.
That's the key to this.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you for the song. Who are you? I think, right, if you haven't listened to the song, you want to listen to the lyrics. It's very interesting, right? He finds himself sitting in the gutter, right? And the policeman said, hey, get your tuss out of here and go home, right? Do you know that's a true part of his story?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because he had a terrible day that day. He had met with some executives and the who was already on its way down. And this executive was at, and he had enough. He went to a bar, he got drunk, stone drunk. And he was literally sitting out in the curb on the thing. And a policeman said, I would take you to jail, but I know who you are. If you can get yourself up out of here and go home, I'll let you go. And that became the first, who are you? He asked himself, who am I? I know my greatness. I know what musical talents I have. I'm not going to let some zhick in the executive office tell me what this, that, and the other. And he was inspired, whatever. But that's the key. You are not by what you're not defined by what you do or don't do. It's who you are. Now, how do you know who you really are? Okay, welcome to the real test of life. This was a question I asked my teacher. I was at that point, I think I was either third or fourth year post high school. I was already in yeshiva. And I went over to my teacher, my Rebbe, and I said to him, I know I drank from the Kool-Aid. I believe we're all here for a purpose. Yes, I get it. But none of us come like Cabbage Patch dolls with a little, here's your name, here's your tendencies, here's what you need to do, and there's nice, neat instructions. None of us came with that connected to the umbilical cord. None of us. So how are we supposed to know what we're here to do? How do you know?
It's very hard.
It's very hard. He said to me the following, and I really, it was such a smart answer. I would say he got paid the big bucks, but he didn't. But smart, smart answer. He said to me like this. Everybody, if they're honest with themselves, and he says that's a big if, but if a person is honest and they can look within themselves, they should be able to identify what strengths and weaknesses they have. They should be able to do that. Maybe not perfectly, maybe not see it, you know, on the next level, but you have to know. You got to know who you are. What are your strengths? What are you good at? He says it's not a guarantee, but it's extremely likely that if these are the strengths you have, that's what you need to focus on. That's what you're here to contribute to this world. That's what we're here for. And similarly, your weaknesses, that's what you're here to overcome. So yeah, you get certain people, they're patient as can be. Nothing rankles them. Nothing, you know, they just, okay, not me. But that's, you know, certain people have a much shorter fuse. Hey, nice to see you guys, right? Right? So, okay, so I'm honest with myself. What are my triggers? What do I have to do? What are strategies that I can be better so that I don't lose my cool? What are the, that's a weakness. I have to, what are my strengths? At that time, I was finishing my degree. My undergraduate degree is in computer science. And that's what I envisioned. I envisioned that I was going to be one of these, you know, pocket protecting guys, you know, and coding and making serious money. That's what I envisioned. I was good at computers and this sounded like a great job. But something was gnawing at me. Something, it's just, yeah, I can do it. But it didn't feel like that's me. And he got me thinking. He didn't say anything more than what I just shared with you. He didn't say, well, I think you're like, he didn't offer any advice. He didn't offer anything personal. But he got my wheels turning. And I said, but that's not me. I'm a people person. I need to be able to connect with people and do that. And that's really, I switched. I got my undergraduate degree. And then for my master's, I switched to education. Because I said, that's me. That's much more in tune with me. I had to identify it. What did I do before? I played sports. What did I do? I got in trouble. Okay, but it didn't define me. Made me better teacher, right? But it didn't define who I was. So this question of who you are starts from the beginning of history to the beginning of our history as a nation with Abraham, Lech Lecha, go on this journey to find out who you are. It continued all the way to our leaders of Moshe, and we can keep going. That's the question. Who are you? Okay, we'll leave it at that. Any questions? Yeah. Simple, soft, you know, just a little.
Wow. Yeah.
Was that heavy?
It was good.
We understood.
Good. That's my job. My job is to, if I tell you stuff you already know, what's fun? There's no fun.
No, I have to say something.
Please.
The only thing I was really good at when I was a kid was reading. Because that's all I did. And if I had identified who am I would have said, an analytical reader. That's what I love reading. And after many twists and turns, I became a librarian.
Yeah.
So, and I never regretted it. I mean, I've thought since then, and I was 40. I mean, it was not like... And I thought there were many other things that I don't know if I could have done then, but I recognize that I could have done in hindsight. But I don't regret the path I took, because it led to my identifying strengths I didn't know I had,
yeah,
that were not particularly connected to reading.
Yeah.
And that is just such a, I mean, maybe it's lame to say all I could do, I could read, you know, but it was more meaningful to me. And I still read 4 to 5 books a week.
Wow.
Sort of. And they're not all lengthy tomes.
Maybe you want to become a scanner at some point.
Scanner.
Yeah, I thought about it, but not really.
But you're so, what you said is so good. It's so true, because the experiences led to things. Like, I had no idea that this is, I mean, I made up my head that, yeah, I'd be a teacher, right? I had no idea the twists and turns of to be in the position that I'm in now. No way. I remember, and I tell you this 100% honestly, and I know Liz has a hard time believing me, I was not sociable as a kid. I could not look people in the eye. I had great difficulty. You're looking at it and you're like, it's a different kid. What are you talking about? Of course, you're so good. I'm telling you. But I was in situations and I had to grow into myself. I had to learn it. And it wasn't like somebody sat there and coached me through it. It just, you know, I give my wife most of that credit. I really do. I really, really do. Now she looks at me and she says, however, clearly you had this because I fell in love with you for a reason. You know, like I didn't just pick you as a project, you know? No, tough luck. Right? But you're right. Those experiences down the path you brought out more latent, right, qualities and traits that you didn't even know. I had no idea. Adult education was not even on my radar screen. It really wasn't. Even after I made up my mind to go into education, I figured I'd go out to some, you know, smaller Jewish community where they have, let's say, a day school or Hebrew school, and I'd be, you know, middle school kind of. I was good at sports. So I can get away with that, you know, but I was given an opportunity. I had no idea where it was going to go. But it brought out much, much greater things than I have ever imagined. But I had to identify it. It's so important. And it doesn't make a difference at what age this is. It really doesn't. I hate to remind you, you know, you'll be upset.
I know, it's a journey.
It is, but you'll also be upset because Moshe, I mean, that was like, this is like the leadership. He led the Jewish, how old was he when he took this position? Take a wild guess. 80 years old, he first started.
Oh, let us hope.
That's why I'm saying it doesn't make a difference what age you're
back there.
There's a guy, Muriel, there's a guy, I don't want to have too much information, somebody who medically is rough shape, really rough shape. And through a friend of a friend, was introduced to Rabbi David myself, you know, about Shogash. And he physically couldn't come to camp. We wanted him to come. It would give him such a boost of positivity. I mean, seeing hundreds of kids and just all the excitement. And it would be good for his Jewish soul to give him a little, you know, a little pep. He couldn't. He stayed on. He said, fine. His friend brought him. And it was like, wow. We're sitting around the table and he's krechzing. He's groaning. You know, he's got this thing. It's this. And I'm too old. Oh, he said those magic words. I'm too old already. That's the button that you have to push with me. If you want me to get going, just say that.
Okay? I'm too old.
And I told him, I told him this exact story. I told him the story of Moshe. Everybody knows the story. Moses, right? How old was he? I had no idea. I said he took the position of leadership at age 80, and he did it for 40 years. Really?
No.
Really?
Oh, sorry.
And now he quotes this back to me, how much inspiration that gave him. There's no time frame for the more we do this, the more we recognize these are some of the strengths. You have wisdom on top of those strengths because you've lived. You have life experiences that younger folk do not have. That's something that you can give at whatever age. The young think they know it all. We know they don't. Okay? These are all, there's no age until the day we leave this earth. We have what to contribute here with the strengths that we have been given, the talents that we have. That's what we have to give. That's how we make one person's life better today than it was yesterday. That's a day complete. That's it. Am I going to go change the whole world? I doubt it. I could be wrong. Moses was surprised too, right? But I don't see it in my cards. But can I make a difference in somebody's life? Yeah. And that's it. Every one of us can do that. But you got to look in. Who am I? Okay, all right.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thoughts, comments, questions? We're good?
Yeah. It's something to think about and how you relate to other people. That's what I'm thinking about. Focusing on not what they do, but building people's esteem up. And I try to do that with my family all the time.
Diane, you're really quite remarkable. I didn't read this part out loud, but this lady, she wrote, I judge people by what they do in their everyday life, their work, relationships, hobbies, interests. I would be lying to your face if I said I didn't. I want to associate with people that live with purpose, that have passions and pursuits. I find these characteristics of a person inspiring. However, I need to remind myself that this accumulation of what these people do is not who they are.
Right.
Taking this concept of looking within ourselves, it also, as Diane says, is looking at everybody else and not judging them. Well, look what she did. Look what he does. Oh, time out. The same way we shouldn't be defining ourselves by what we do or don't do, we should judge the same for others. It's not necessarily what they do or don't do. You have to know the person. What's their essence? You don't know. Don't be so quick to judge. That's a great point. Whatever. There's only so much I can read out loud.
I think it also ties back to one of the big words we use at Shoresh.
Yet.
Yet. Yet is something I think about all the time. Me too.
Yeah.
When people say, I don't do this.
Yes.
Yet.
It is. That is one of our favorite words. Because that means everybody can grow. Everybody's growing. Just give them the chance. This is one chapter in the person's life. That chapter is finished now. Start a new chapter. It's all good. Always.
And I certainly do feel like who I became, if I look back at where I started, even as I see my young adult self in my memory, it's a lot of things that have happened to me I couldn't have imagined. I would have said to you, oh, I'm not strong enough to withstand that, but I was. It changed me, but I was. I'm here. I couldn't have imagined that. And that is what? That's the gift of aging.
I think, because
the other parts, you know, maybe aren't so, but this is the gem of it, you know, the juice of it, that you can be somebody who you maybe had potential. I don't know how I feel about that word, but, you know, that back then I couldn't, but today I have all that stuff in me. Plus everything that's happened.
I think when you get older, though, you choose, you recognize the power of your choice to choose the direction that you want to focus on in a way that when you're younger, either you don't have the wisdom or the strength or the vision of opportunity, maybe not the realization that it's hard work, that it's not just you want it so it will come. It
happens, yeah.
Right.
And I do think that when you get older, and I don't mean old, I mean as you get older, if you are open to seeing and hearing other people, that it helps to provide focus and strength
for yourself.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
And it's interesting too that I just say, because we have two 16-year-olds, you know, we start on the college thing and what do you want to study and who do you want to be and what do you like, what are you interested in? These questions are up in this house, you know, more than they were, say, a year ago. And
it's exhausting.
I think that, you know, the implication, perhaps in their perception, at least, we know better. But their perception is, I'm deciding now who I'm going to be.
Yeah, good luck.
I'm deciding. I'm going to pick this path, and they don't know 500 things in Sashem that are going to happen to them that they can't even imagine yet. But now I'm doing
but
this.
I need to go to
I have a test tomorrow. I have to take this thing. I have to go. I'm applying here. I'm going to go here. I'm going to be an engineer. And you're thinking
all
that these
that.
Things are the things of who you are. You're building yourself up when really yourself is a little deeper.
Yep.
Even deeper.
Yeah.
And they're digging deep. It's not like they're not, you know, they are to come up with the questions of what do I want to, where do I want to, what am I good at? You know, it's almost like we're telling them, you're making these decisions now and this plots it out.
Well, that's society.
But we
that
know
so
that there's
that
so,
so
much more.
Oh my God!
You have to choose your major.
Yeah, but
right
you have
school
to. I
mean,
it's like you have to. Well,
what
you don't have to. You don't have to go at all. But you know, if you're gonna go, yeah.
So the guidance that we've learned over the years is that yeah, they have to go through that process, but at the same time, not to lose sight of this.
Mm,
they
yes.
have to keep that as well. Again. You want to follow this path. It sounds like a great path. It's definitely some of your strengths. But again, be open to the fact that this is not necessarily defining
yeah,
you.
This is what you do. It may be what you love, but it's not.
Yeah, to me, the way she phrased it, I couldn't have said it any better. It's so, that's exactly it. What you do is not who you are.
And the truth is, you know, what did I do? I went into publishing and I worked in publishing. And that was a big part of my identity for a long time. And I did that because I'm a reader and I like books. And if you ask me, what do I like? I can't think of anything. What am I good at? But I like to read and I like to be around books. So I made that choice. But if you, and so that was a chapter. But I,
but
see,
there's so much more.
And who am I?
Right.
Doesn't, you know, when you're young, you're looking ahead. That's who I am. But when you're old, you're looking back. You're saying, that was just a piece.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Shooting star in some cases.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure.
All right. What's
my
the
pleasure.
Date? Oh. We're going to have
fun. We had to think of all the different choices.
Bye-bye.
You can stay. I'm just turning on.